You know, there's massive investment opportunities across the landscape. And I think that's a really optimistic and true thought to hold on to.
Welcome to Climate Curious.
We're coming to you live from TED Countdown,
which is TED's Climate Summit.
Now, we all know that TED is normally about sparking curiosity, ideas, even inspiration. But sometimes an issue requires more than that, and climate change is just that issue. So TED Countdown is all about impact. It's all about action.
Right, and we've had an amazing opportunity to speak with some of the world leaders in the climate movement. So this season of the podcast is going to be intense and it's going to be amazing.
There are going to be some moments of silence, right, some moments of awe, definitely some laughter and some unexpected climate confessions.
Some things that you've definitely never heard before. It's a good season. It's a good season.
So let's get started. So Ben, today we're going to talk about something. Oh, I think actually we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. But one of the things we're going to talk about is a demographic and a topic maybe that we haven't talked about on this podcast before, but that's super important. And that, I don't know if Gabriel, you're going to agree with me, but we're going to talk a little bit about money, I think.
I'm happy to talk about money.
Let's talk about cash.
Well, we'll start there.
Green.
We'll start there. But
Moolah.
Why don't we start by introducing Gabriel Krah?
My name is Gabriel, and I am a managing director, but a co-founder of Prelude Ventures. We invest in climate tech. So everything we invest in, we have to see that it's going to have a really big and meaningful and hopefully massive impact on climate change. And that's an impact to mitigate climate change, excuse me, just to be 100% clear on that. We're a venture investor, which means we're investing in early stage companies. And we're, you know, investing at the stages where they're still often just a small group of entrepreneurs with a technology that needs to be further developed and grown and scaled into a big, massive company. We've been doing that since 2013.
So we've got a lot to unpack here. Yeah. You were obviously going to do a better job explaining what you do than me, which right. Thank you for that. But 2013 feels like quite a long time. Is that, have you been doing this? Were lots of people doing this? Were you one of the first? Let's go back in time.
For everyone's knowledge at home, Gabriel was really smiling then.
Yeah, right. So even, I'm going to take you back even a little further. I started working with the people who became our limited partners in 2009. And, you know, from 2009 to 2013, and then even 2015, you know, there was just this incredible, prompted by the Great Recession of 2008, this incredible pullback from what was then called clean tech. So we started doing work and investing in 2010. We didn't have the current fund structure. But like from 2013 to 2015, we weren't the best at what we did. We were the only ones at what we did. If I went out and said, I'm a clean tech, because whoever invented the great phrase climate tech hadn't done it yet. If I went out and said, I'm a clean tech investor and a venture investor, like I had to explain two or three times to somebody what I was talking about.
You're going to hate this because I'm going to ask what clean tech is.
Well, clean tech is just the same, you know, it's a narrower version of climate tech. So, which is what the phrase we use now. So if climate tech, you're talking about energy and batteries and food and agriculture and transportation and logistics, and, you know, and because all these things have a big impact on climate, and all these things are also massive opportunities, right? To fix something that's broken. And so, you know, back in 2013, nobody, like, really, you're a fund that's investing in solutions for climate change? Huh. What's that again?
Yeah. You know, in 2013, now people didn't even believe in that, right?
Like, right.
That's not a real thing.
Right.
And the people you're talking to here are like other investors, right? People who are in that world without
the word. We had to sort of convince them that we were a legitimate investor.
Okay.
Now, you know, I think it started shifting in, 2015 with the Paris COP. And then we started really seeing it a little bit more in like 2018-ish timeframe. And, you know, these are all vague, you know, times of when things happen. But really, I think something clicked during the months of lockdown of the pandemic, because, you know, March 2020, we all got locked in our homes and we were all working on our companies and wondering what was going to be the impact of this horrible thing that was happening. And sometime in the fall, you know, like the dust began to settle from that. And all of a sudden there were new entrants and massive interest, you know. So, you know, fast forward from 2013 to 2021, the first half of 2021 was the biggest ever semester, you know, two quarters of climate tech investing in the history of venture. And, you know, and I think it's across the stages, not just early stage, but growth investing in companies and projects and development. So there's a lot more activity in the sector now.
So when you said that, my mind went to like, there was squirrels in my garden, stuff like there was things that I'd not seen for a long time that I was seeing.
Yeah.
But what do you think the reasoning for that was during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think squirrels in the garden is actually the right, you know, one way I've started to process it. I think the pieces were in place. You know, people were getting interested, investors, pools of capital, you know, the message, you know, it's more visceral now. Like we all see, you know, climate change is something big and different, distant, right?
Right.
But we see extreme weather, right? I live in California. We've had 4 or 5 fire seasons in a row where we don't go out of house sometimes 20, 30 days in a row because like it's so smoky that it's dangerous. You know, my kids didn't go to school multiple days. I can't remember which year because the smoke was so bad and they canceled school. Like everybody's seeing it.
And they said
everybody's
being outside is like smoking 7 cigarettes or something
exactly,
a day.
Exactly. And so... and then you had time to go and reflect and you had time to go sit and be at home and working remotely. And I just hope that people sort of realized, one, it's a big opportunity. Two, it's really important. And, you know, and that galvanized people. I'm sure there's a 3, 4, and 5 that I could come up with.
So I want to ask some really fundamental basic questions. Because I think that the people, lots of you listening, aren't investors, aren't in that world, you know, don't understand why this is an important part of the fight against climate change and what we're doing. Can you just break that down for us a little bit?
Sure. When it's released, listen to my TED talk. But really, look, there's a bunch of stuff that has happened that's already, we need to just go out and implement it. Solar and wind and other renewables, they're cheaper to make electricity. There are a cheaper way to make electricity than fossil fuels, right? Let's start building and developing them massively, right? That's good. Electric vehicles, they've come down the cost curve, right? So, you know, I don't understand why anybody's going to buy a gasoline, a petrol car in 5 years from now. Like you'd be crazy to want to do that and to do that. And so things like that, I could rattle off some more examples. We got to go build them, scale them, develop them. They're here. But we got some really wickedly hard problems. I can rattle off a few. You know, food and agriculture, it counts like getting food on our plates for what, 7-8 billion people. It's 20-30% of global emissions, right? So how do we grow wheat, corn, rice, and soy, those staple crops? How do we grow them with less inputs, with less fertilizer? Like fertilizer feeds the planet, right? But the way it's made, the Haber-Bosch process, I think it contributes something like 5 or 6% of global emissions. Maybe it's up to 7. It releases a ton of methane and CO2 into the atmosphere. We need to invent a better way to do that, right? That's climate tech. Buildings, steel, cement, those two materials account for something like 15%, a little bit more of global emissions. We can't do without steel. We need it, right? Like we need more buildings, right?
Yeah.
We need more roads and more infrastructure, especially in the developing world, right? So we can't stop doing that, but we need to figure out how to make steel and cement that, you know, steel, you use coal to make it, coking coal, and it's terrible. But it makes steel really well. And similarly, cement is a massive CO2 emitter. We need to figure out, there are ways and we need to figure them out better, how to make cement that sucks carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, right? So those are some examples of what is climate tech? What are we investing in solving some of those problems?
So there's two hands here, right? There's solutions that already exist that we need to roll out. And there's other things that we don't have answers for that we need to find answers for. And both of those things require money.
Right.
So we have to get money from somewhere.
And they're different pools of money, right? Like if you're just an investor who just like, I don't want to get too nerdy or wonky, but there's this vast sums of money who literally, they don't want risk. They don't need to make a ton of money. They need to make like 6% a year, you know, like interest. And they can use that money to invest in developing solar and wind farms and make that money relatively risk-free now. It's like a great investment for that pool of developmental capital, right? Now, what I do, you know, a lot of what we're going to do isn't going to work, right? Like, you know, we're right. investing in like really early risky companies. So on the ones that work, we actually need to make a lot more money on those to help pay for the ones that didn't work, right?
Okay. That's kind of how these are the things the steel.
Yeah, like steel is a great example. Okay. We have investments there. The solving fertilizer is a great example. And then we have other companies that are using like machine learning and really massive data analytics. And these are actually computing techniques that they weren't invented like 10 or 15 years ago. And now they're applying them to how do we make chemicals, all sorts of problems. How do we make chemicals without using oil and gas, right? Like you have to drill for gas, natural gas, to make ethylene, which is like the largest feedstock on the planet, right? A huge climate problem, but it's cheap and it makes all sorts of products that we need. So how do you replace that?
Like the YouTube of the climate world, like one of those industries that didn't exist or doesn't exist yet.
That's right.
Okay, I get that. Yeah. I understand.
Right,
so Mariam, I've been thinking, how did we start this podcast?
That's a great question. So at TEDx London, we're all about ideas worth spreading. We've explored everything from gender and borders to technology and design at our events. We've been doing this for 5 years. And in that journey, Citi has been our headline partner, and they've been with us every step of the way. But when it came to the climate crisis, we needed a new format. We wanted to break out of the red circle, to speak directly to the climate leaders, to ask questions and to be curious. And as always, Citi was there with us, supporting our vision, encouraging us to be courageous and adventurous with our ideas. So thank you, Citi, for making this podcast and all of our work possible. For the love of ideas, for the love of curiosity, for the love of progress. Citi. Now back to the show. When people who are investors think about investing, it feels really far away from them. But I've come to realize that like things like your pension and all of these different things that actually you are part of, it's all part of this, right?
Like
it's all in this world that you were talking about, the different kinds of investment.
And so like your pension is probably a lot of that money is invested in the things like the big projects where it's lower risk, lower return, because, you know, if you're managing somebody's pension, you know, like, you know that
you can't lose that money.
Grandma needs that. They need that $1,000 a month, you know, right? Like,
they're on play. Exactly. People's
but that same pension fund can also have like, you know, they've got, $100 billion under management in like some of the big pension funds all around the world, right? And so out of that $100 billion that they manage, you know, they're going to put, I don't do their job. They're going to put $50 billion into really safe stuff and whatever. They might allocate, you know, $5 or $10 billion towards, you know, venture stuff because that matches how they match risk and return and their requirements. And some of that, God, I hope a whole bunch of it goes towards climate tech instead of just traditional venture capital.
So that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, do you think, like, do you have a vision for how you want the whole finance world to move? Like, obviously what you're doing is really, like, cutting, I hate that phrase, cutting edge. But you know what I mean? It's like you're not doing the norm.
But
do we need to move that whole world?
We totally do. We totally need to move that whole world. And we do it in a couple of different ways. One, we do it, like we were just talking about, I won't return to it too much, de-risking things that are climate positive, you know? So, okay, once they're de-risked, lots more money can pour on into it. And that's good and positive. We need to, you know, look, we need to frankly make rules that say if you're investing in oil and gas, right? If you're investing in these things that are incredibly negative for us, that cause these climate disasters, you know, there's actually going to be a price to pay for that. The producing oil isn't going to be free, right? Or coal, especially. It's not free. Coal does damage and coal has to pay for the damage it does. We should create a structure where if you're investing in coal, you understand that that coal is going to have to pay for it. We can't keep doing that. We can't keep investing in coal. I'm thinking more like something like the price of carbon that the coal emits. We got to stop doing coal. Like, because, it's a terrible example. But
because when people say things are more expensive, right? Like, this is something I didn't care about at all 2 years ago, but now I'm like really getting into is this idea that actually when you say something is more expensive, like let's say a traditional petrol car versus yeah. like an electric car or like certain kinds of energy versus other kinds of energy, what we're not doing is pricing in the damage that it does. Right,
totally. Like our whole economy was built over the past, 200 years without realizing that the pollution we're putting into the atmosphere is pollution. Like that's it. That's what it is. Right. And we have to pay. Somebody's going to pay for that. Yeah. We're paying for it right now when we have floods, when we have fires, when we have heat waves. That's us paying for that pollution.
Right. And when you say pay, you don't necessarily mean with money. No, you mean paying. Yeah, with we're like suffering. Real life yeah, that's consequences. Right.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. Look, I'm from the United States. We passed laws in the 70s because big chemical companies were dumping their pollution into the rivers and lakes. And we're like, whoa, you got to pay for that. We got to do the same thing with dumping pollution into the atmosphere.
So I have a question. My understanding of investments is that people don't necessarily care about what they're investing
yeah, right.
so much as the return that they're right. getting on the investment.
Right.
So does that mean that your job is to make those investments more popular or to convince people that there's a moral or an ethical benefit to invest in there? Or is it something, is there a different way of moving that?
Well, look, that's a huge question. My job is to we have limited partners, they're investors and they invest large sums of money. My job is to take their money and invest it in companies that's going to enable me to return much more money. Like right. that's what it means to be an investor. I get to do that only in companies that are going to have a positive impact and climate change. I think that is an awesome job. But to your question, yeah, like as an individual or as an institution, we should be saying, what is the impact of our dollars?
Right.
Right. Like that's a moral choice. That's an ethical choice. It would be great if we could build a regulatory framework around that. But yeah, like we got to think about that. And we got to think about that every day.
And I know like when I was signing up for my pension, there was an option, right?
Yeah.
Like there's like three different buttons and there's one that's like, you can make the most money doing this or you can not destroy the planet doing this. Or this one might help some people over here and you make that decision.
Yeah, I hate that framing. Some folks I know did some amazing work I saw it from the Grantham Foundation, a really amazing group of people funded by Jeremy Grantham, and they demonstrated that like there are sort of eight industrial sectors and the claim from investment experts is that you need to be broad across all of these sectors to have really good risk-free returns over the long run. And they did this analysis that if you just took out oil and gas, if you took out the energy sector, and it didn't matter what time frame you looked at, you could look at 5 years, 10 years, 80 years, 20 years, any time frame within it, you could ignore oil and gas and you were going to do just as well. People who tell you that you can't be more thoughtful in how you put your money to work, I think they're selling you a myth.
I think that's like maybe the most important thing anyone has ever said on this podcast.
Right.
Because
wow, I think that a lot of compliment.
People, well, no, because I think a lot of people, I'm at that age, I'm at that point where I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, I've got to think about my pension. I've got to think about how do I do this? Like, how do I get my money to work for me? All that kind of stuff that when you're like 20 and in front of your mind. But actually, and then people do come at you with this stuff. Like, well, you gotta, you know, that's all well and good. But if you really want to have any savings, you got to invest in that bad stuff because that's where the money's at.
Check out what the oil and gas companies have done over, say, the last 5 years versus what the S&P 500 has done. And you're gonna find some counter evidence. Look, we know these things are problems. And I think the shareholders in those companies are beginning to realize it too. So yeah, you can divest and make money.
There's also like a weird, which I've just thought of, like a weird kind of juxtaposition here, because the nature of investment is that a lot of it that probably doesn't even come back to you, right? Like this is about, I guess, generational wealth and investing for a future, but a future that you're not investing in, because the things that you're investing in are actively making that future disappear or making that future really difficult for the people that are going to inherit that.
That is such a crazy, like, hard thought to. Yeah, that I love that what you just said. Like, that's such a hard thing to hold in your brain, right?
Yeah, like you were investing in things.
Weird vibe. Right.
You were told to invest in your future, but the very things you're investing in are destroying your future.
So I'm going to shift us then to a little bit of hope, because I have a lot of hope and a lot of optimism. We invest in companies that are making money, and they're doing it by solving problems. So, you know, I mentioned fertilizer earlier, and you can edit out the name of this company, Pivot Bio, from the podcast if you like, but they're making a substitute for a traditional fertilizer, and they don't have to displace all the fertilizer in the world, but this is a product with no emissions, right? So this is a product that goes on, that farmers are using to fertilize their field, and not like small little, you know, crops like corn and wheat. You know, like, these are the major, you know, in the US and much of the world, the major the crops that feed billions of people. And they're doing it in a way without emissions. And this company's scaling and growing amazingly, right? We have another company that went public last year called QuantumScape. And they're part of the electric vehicle revolution. They're making batteries that are going to help cars not only drive, you know, 300, 500 miles on a single charge, but be able to charge in, you know, 10 or 15 minutes in the same amount of time that you fill your gas tank, right? So that's going to accelerate the EV revolution. You know, we have another company, Form Energy, that is making a completely different sort of battery, but these batteries, they last for days to weeks, not, you know, hours. And so they can be used, like, you have this massive solar farm, but it only produces energy when the sun shines. And you have this massive wind farm, but it only produces energy when the wind blows, with these Form long duration battery storage systems. And there's other companies doing the same thing. Suddenly that wind or solar electricity is what's called firm and dispatchable. That means, you know, it can be deployed whenever you need it, not just when the sun is shining or the wind is blowing. So there are massive investment opportunities. That's my world. You know, there's massive investment opportunities across the landscape that are solving these problems. And I think that's a really optimistic and true thought to hold on to.
And that sounds really, like, logical, right? Like, this is legitimately the future. Like, we have no option but to move in, whether we do it quick or slow.
Right. We need to do both.
And regardless of whether we mitigate risk or whatever, like, the world has to move in this direction for it to work.
Right.
So that's a smart investment.
Yeah.
It sounds not telling you what to do with your money.
I'll take your advice.
No, but I think it's there is something about how this is no longer fringe. Someone said it on stage here. Someone said it's no longer science fiction. It's just science.
Yeah. That was a brilliant line.
Yeah. From the Danish environmental minister.
The Danish environmental minister, that's right.
The Viking.
The Viking. He painted a picture of the future that, you know, we believe in, and it may not be tomorrow and it may not be the next day, but it's in the next few years, where you take, you know, his thing was you take wind power. We got that. You take that wind power, you put it into electrolyzers. An electrolyzer is a machine that literally takes water and electricity and converts it into hydrogen and oxygen. So you take wind power and you make electricity. You take electricity and you make hydrogen. You take hydrogen and you make ammonia. And now you can do all sorts of stuff with that ammonia, right? Or you take the hydrogen and you can even use that in another set of chemical reactions to make jet fuel. And like, suddenly you've displaced all sorts of fossils, and given enough time, it's going to be cost competitive with them.
Scientists are so smart. How do you figure that stuff out?
I mean, I find this stuff super exciting and hopeful, because it's you said it before, and I think, Gabriel, you said it in your talk, the new and the now go hand in hand.
That's right.
There's stuff that we need to do right now that we know how to do, and there are lots of people that can do that, and then you've got to have some people working on the new stuff.
100%,
you know,
right.
And I think that's really... I really like that both and thinking. You know, one of our first guest of our first season talked about both and thinking, and how everything with climate has to be that way.
Yeah, and it's so easy to get trapped in sort of doom and gloomism, but it's, you know, it's not true necessarily, and it's also not productive.
And now it's time for our climate confessions. Let's fess up to the bad habits we just can't kick.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us. We have a final segment that we'd like to take you through.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of is self-explanatory, but the idea is that it's really easy for people who are listening to feel overwhelmed with some of this information and for this dominant narrative to be out there around how you have to be perfect to work on climate. And we want to just shatter that myth that we are all humans and this stuff is hard.
Yep.
And so we always ask our guests to share a climate confession, something that they aren't, they struggle with or that they know that they're not doing perfectly.
Yeah. I think, look, you can't be perfect. You shouldn't strive to be perfect. I don't strive for it, nor do I claim that. I'll make it a little bit of a story and I'll tell you what. When I graduated from college, I grew up on the East Coast. I went to college in New York City. There was one thing I really wanted to do more than anything else, and I went and did it. I was a ski bum. I moved to Colorado. Ooh. And I worked as a dishwasher, a waiter, or whatever it was, because I skied like 100 days that year. It was awesome. I'm still incredibly passionate about skiing, and I go with my wife and my four kids, and we drive up to Tahoe most weekends of the winter. That is not climate friendly at all, right? Like, and now we just got our first EV SUV that can fit us. It's actually a hybrid, and I'm so excited about that because a family of six, it was hard to get us into an EV. But you know, that feeds my soul, right? Like, I get to the mountains and I just feel better. And it gives me motivation to go out and do it. So yeah, that's not the most climate positive thing as an act, but it's part of who I am. I love it. I couldn't, you know, be as happy and productive without it.
I love what you said there about feeding your soul, right? Because I think there's a reality of doing the work in whatever capacity people are doing the work in, that means that you actually have to be there to be able to do it. And you have to be good and healthy and happy and whole and feel like you can show up and do stuff. And sometimes feeling like that means that you can't always be perfect.
You can't be perfect.
But I guess it's like offsetting. It's almost like offsetting your carbon footprint when you fly on a plane, right? Like, you still have to fly, but what can you do to stop or to lessen the impact of that thing? And how do we do that in our own lives? Which is a nice way of kind of seeing that. I like that.
I think that's such a beautiful story. I love it. I love that you do that. And that I love that it fuels you to do this work that is necessary. So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Nice to have been
everyone.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
If you did, please rate, subscribe, and share this episode with a curious friend. It makes us possible to keep making this amazing content for you.
Oh, and slide into our DMs at TEDx London and let us know which climate extraordinaires you'd love to hear from next time. Oh, and don't leave yet. We wanted to tell you a bit more about who made this podcast possible.
Yeah, we did. TEDx London's headline partner, City, has been supporting us for the past 5 years to bring world-changing ideas to the TEDx London stage. And now they're taking it to the next level by making this podcast possible. Thanks, City.
But wait, that is not all.
No, this podcast was produced by the amazing Josie Coulter.
Curation and research by the genius Tara Cooper.
Artwork designed by the visionaries that are Sabrina Russo and Rebecca Mingus.
Mixed and engineered by the iconic Ben Beheshti, aka The Falcon, who also composed our banging theme tune.
Presented by me, Mariam Pasha.
And by me, Ben Hurst. Stay curious.